It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void. We're prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Ever wonder what it takes to go from being an amateur to professional in sport? Welcome to An Athlete's Blueprint, the podcast that uncovers the secrets of champions, to let you know what it really takes to win a medal or break a record. Speaking to players and coaches, I capture insights from the training ground to the world stage, having the conversations normally kept behind closed doors. An Athlete's Blueprint is the podcast for sports enthusiasts starting out or those chasing the next podium. Get ready to rethink what you know about competing. Let's meet Alfie Wright, a four-time world champion disabled strongwoman. In this episode, we cover how to overcome tough training camps, discover the excitement of competing on the world stage, celebrate the camaraderie of the disabled strongman community, learn about the difficulties of traveling as a disabled athlete, hear about the future of disabled strongman. This conversation with Alfie will leave you more than inspired.
So what inspired you to get into disabled strongman?
I was actually with British Weightlifting for several years, competing as a para powerlifter. But I got quite bored because it's literally only bench press. That's all you do is bench press. And after about three or four years, I was quite successful. I was the English champion and the British champion. But I got a bit bored and I wanted a new challenge. So originally I wanted to do rowing and I thought that would be really cool. But you've got to be like 6 foot and I'm only like 4 foot 11. So I got turned down by British Rowing. So I thought, well, what else can I do? So I was originally going to try disabled powerlifting. And then the guy said to me, you do know there's disabled strongman. And I thought, oh, this sounds good. He put me in touch with a guy called Gary Clark. And I had a conversation with him. I joined. Originally, I wasn't going to try at the British title because I didn't really know what I was doing, but I already had the strength. So I thought I would go to the British and see what happened. Well, I was a little bit surprised where I won. I just was expecting to go there and try the events and everything. I mean, I did train, but it's not one of those things where you can go and train at a gym. Not many gyms have like logs and Atlas stones and things, especially because I'm in a seated category. So I just had to really follow what Gary said to me. And I went there and even Magnus from Magnusson said, oh my God, where did you come from? And I thought, oh, I must have done a good job if he said that. And that's really how I got into it. And then because I won the British, I had entry to the Worlds. So I thought I'd have a go at that and I won that. And that's really how it went on. Go over here, win that, go over here, win that. So yeah, I was really proud of myself. I did a really good job and I wasn't expecting myself to do such a good job.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even like beginner's luck or anything. You just naturally had the ability and yeah, I think obviously your background helped and Yeah, I think that's really cool. And when you were speaking with Magnus and Gary Clark and things like that, what were sort of your first expectations, you know, when you first started speaking with them?
Well, didn't really know Magnus, but Magnussen is like four times world champion. I was a bit in awe of him. I was, huh? But he's the coolest man, and he just is such a down-to-earth guy. And he said, you know, you did really well. You've now got entry to the world. Just train. He said, train. I was like, okay. Gary was very good because obviously he was the first disabled strongman in the UK. I took a lot of knowledge from him because obviously he knows what he's doing, and he's the one that runs the Brits. So I went and did a bit of training with him. I did training with other people who weren't in the disabled categories, but they were strongmen. And they helped me with my technique, because it's really all about strength and technique. If you've got a good technique, then it's not as hard. And then I went on to, there's a guy in Farnborough, Martin Ty. He's an epic athlete. So I took knowledge from him because he is extremely good. And I used to go to his house and he'd help me with my training and stuff. And that's how it went on. And I love it. It's such a cool sport. People don't realise it's such a niche sport as well. It's not something that you see every day. And these athletes are amazing.
And how did you train? I know you said you had to go to somebody's house, but what actually is the training regime?
So it's all about strength. You don't, because I'm in a seated category, it's literally training from the waist upwards. And it is hard on the body. It is hard because an able-bodied person would be able to split their training into like a leg day and stuff like that. And you don't have that luxury. It is literally all about upper body. And the number of, not injuries, but ailments you get from it, like you get tennis elbow and stuff, and it literally is, you go to the gym, you train for strength. That's what you do.
So is it a little bit like a boxer in the sense that you have like a training camp? You know, say if you're going to compete at, a British tournament or a world tournament, do you kind of psych yourself up and say, right, the next 6 weeks I'm going to be training for the event? And then after that, what's the recovery period like?
You just need to lie down. It's really, you need to lie down and not train for a while. It is hard. Everybody ramps up their training. I mean, probably 3 months out from competition, I'm then thinking to myself, right, I know what the events are going to be. And then I think, which is my least favourite event or my event that I'm not as good at, and I will train that as hard as I can. I will train the strength for it. I will train that event until I can't train it anymore. And then I'll worry about what it is that we've got. Like, I don't like stones. I don't like them. But I will have to train them. But I try not to train them too much because it's all about strength. If you've got the strength, you can pick the stone up. But there's other things that I'm not a fan of log either, but it is what it is, you know. But it's a different type of training for log because it's a different way to hold the actual log. So I'll just train that, make sure I've done a lot of bicep and tricep training. Just hope for the best while I'm there.
So kicking off and going to one of those events then, you know, how does the day sort of pan out?
All the athletes, like, you don't get to see a lot of the athletes. I mean, you've got your friends in the athlete world and you speak to them on a regular basis. So, you know, you have contact with them. And then there's the guys that you don't see very often because they live miles away or you're not a friend with them. But you'll say, oh, hi, how's it going? All of the team come together. Not everybody competes at the same time, but a lot of the team will come together and it's like one big family. So, you know, yeah, you could be competing with one of the closest people to you, but it doesn't matter. You know, everybody spurs each other on and the camaraderie is great. No one, I've never, ever yet seen an argument. Never.
Wow.
Everybody supports each other.
I love that. And when you're actually competing, are they timed events? Like, how does it work in terms of that aspect?
Like truck pull is timed. Dumbbell press, lock, everything is a timed event. You get X amount of time, and it sounds a long time. Like, you've got a minute and a half to do what, like dumbbell press. You think that's quite a lot, but when you're actually doing it, the time's just gone. Like, where did that go?
That's funny. And you know, which one is like your personal favorite then?
I love a truck pull.
I was going to say, I thought it might be.
I love a truck pull. I'm good. I've got a good technique for truck pull. Not boasting or anything. But I don't know. It's one of those events that I find quite easy, and it doesn't matter what you put in front of me.
That's good. And in terms of, you know, honing that technique and things like that, where did that come from? Is that just innate or?
I don't know. When I first went to the Brits and they said, you've got to pull this 200 kilo barrel across the floor to over there. And I thought, oh, I've not done this before. But I was trying to work out what the best way to do it. And I don't know. It just, some things you're just naturally good at. And I seem to be naturally good. I don't know. I just found a technique that worked for me.
I love that.
And I adopt that in every time I pull, regardless of whether it's a 200 kilo barrel or an 8-ton truck.
Have you actually done an 8-ton truck?
Yes. Yes.
Wow. That's pretty nuts.
It was in Iceland in the Worlds.
Yeah, I was going to say, that sounds like it's going to be, you know, one of the top-notch competitions.
They lied to me and told me it was, like, less weight than it actually was. And when I finished, then they told me how much it weighed. And there was people in the truck as well. It's like, oh, dear.
Oh, my God. So at these events, then, are you performing in front of a crowd?
Yeah, because Iceland, not so much, because we were just coming out of COVID. And the same as 2021 in March, we went to the Arnolds and there weren't any spectators. The spectators were the athletes from other things that were being done. We had a lot of support from the able-bodied athletes. Like, I was very proud that they all come out, the Stoltmans and everything came out to see us. So, you know, they do respect us for what we do. But most times you've got spectators. Always at the Brits, you've got spectators. Birmingham NEC, you've got spectators. I mean, the first year we went to the NEC, we were about 8 deep. In people were standing on windows and stuff, in windowsills, to see us.
Mm. Wow. And how did you cope with that pressure?
You got to have tunnel vision. I can see, like, I was the first woman to lift an 80 kilo Atlas stone. And I did it there. You can see the people, but you have to block them out. Because I have to concentrate on what I'm doing. Because you're in this specialist wheelchair and you've got Atlas stones going down the run and you've got to push yourself and you've got to do the Atlas stones. You've got people side by the side of you holding the barrels because you do it from barrel to barrel. Those I listen to. But this, no. It's only when I'm done and everybody's screaming and cheering, I'm like, yes, I've done it. Then I take notice of what's going on.
And that high you get after, you know, finishing a truck pull or the barrels or whatever it is, or, you know, whichever one you do, what's that like for you?
Amazing. You know, you get a buzz, absolute buzz. You're on a high. Everybody's cheering for you. The athletes are cheering for you. They're all giving you high fives. They're all saying, well done. It's amazing. It's amazing. It takes you a little while to come down off that buzz.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And then you've got to start on something else.
Do you find it quite, I wouldn't use the word addictive, but, you know, how do you find that you miss that high?
Yeah, well, I love it. I love competing. It's, I don't know, unless you're an athlete or unless you're doing something where you're competing, it's a weird thing. I suppose you could liken it, and I don't know, like it, to a drug. It gives you that absolute high and then you come down off it. But when you're competing in strongman, it's like this. So you get your high, you're just coming down, then you've got to go and do something else.
Yeah. And is that something that you think, you know, your colleagues and the athletes that you kind of work with all share?
Yeah, everybody, like the buzz. And people that are watching get the buzz from it as well, because there are so many different disabilities of all the athletes. People are in awe of how does that person lift with one arm? You know, how does that person do this with this disability? Oh, that person can't even see. How are they doing that? And people are like, wow. Even not me. I mean, I've got my disabilities, but I look at some of the athletes and think, wow, how are you doing that?
Yeah.
I mean, always in awe of the one-armed athletes, because I tried to lift something with one arm and I'm like, what is wrong with you people? How do you do this?
Yeah, I don't know what they're training, but it's incredible. I think what's most incredible is that it's the amount of endurance and amount of strength and skill the human body really has. And in spite of everything, you know, we are all very incredible. And so I was going to say, so what motivates you?
What, to compete?
Yeah.
So originally I was able-bodied, but unfortunately things went a bit wrong for me and I ended up with lots of different things wrong with me that contributed to what I am today. And it was my way of channeling, because I was very cross for a long time, and it was my way of channeling that energy, and it made me feel better just training. And then I wanted to do something. So it makes you feel so good. And some of these guys have had a lot of trauma. Unfortunately, some of them have had some horrific injuries in the army, and it's their way of dealing with that. You know, you could have unfortunately been blown up in Afghan, but look at what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
You know, it's a way for them mentally to cope with what's happened to them. And it's not, you don't get one person in the disabled strong world that's happened to. There's a lot of them. So they all support each other. And it's a sort of therapy. It's a way of like dealing with what's happened to you, how to come to terms with it. And they do very well.
Yeah, I think that's a really nice way of putting it. And are you, you know, was you motivated by family support or anything like that? Or was it, you know, was it purely just channeling the, you know, dismay at your situation into a positive?
My family didn't know what to do because I was so upset for a long time. And it was me that decided, well, maybe if I do this. So I thought I'd have a little go. And it did. I trained every day. I wasn't training for anything. I was training for myself to start with. And you go to the gym, you train, then you meet people at the gym, then you've got your little gym family. And in a way, that comforted me.
Yeah.
It made me feel better about the situation because nobody judges in the gym. They just look and think, and then you make your friends in the gym and they all just chat. No one cares that you've got a disability. It's only the stupid ones that ask stupid questions, but you get that anywhere you go. And in strongman, nobody cares. Everybody's got their disability. Nobody judges you for it. It's a great place to be.
I love that. Yeah, I think it's important, especially when you're honing your skills. And as you said, training and things like that, you need to feel safe. You know, you need to feel safe in the space and you need to be able to, you know, just get on with what you're there to do. And if you need support, it's good to have people that understand and get it around you. I was going to ask, so in terms of the early days and getting into it, was it just sort of potluck? You sort of just turned up at a gym, asked a few people, and then you sort of found your way? Like, how did that actually come about?
I picked a gym that was near to me. I went to the gym. I was very nervous. People were obviously looking like, what's the disabled lady doing here? Oh, my God. But once they got to know me, that was all right. Then I got myself a trainer. And I trained with him twice a week. And I talked to him about, you know, I'd like to do something, you know, Paralympics. When I saw someone swimming with no arms and no legs, I thought, wow, there's space for me somewhere. But I wasn't quite sure. I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do. And he was the one that found British Weightlifting were having like a taster day up in London. So I managed to get on the taster day and they took me on and I was competing with them. But like I said, para powerlifting is a boring sport. It is only bench press. And I wanted to try other things. So that's how I started with a trainer called Luke, who pushed me out of my comfort zone. But it was a good thing. It was a good thing because I did think, oh, I can't do that. But actually, I could. There yeah. wasn't much that I couldn't do. And we used to find ways round how I could do things. And yeah, that's how I started. He was the one that actually said, you know, let's try this. If it wasn't for him, I'd have not, I don't know what I'd have done. I don't know.
Is Luke still supporting you today?
Yes and no. We are friends still. He's got his, he goes and trains at a gym down the road, but I needed to move on. I needed to go to a place where I could train strongman. And there was only one place in Basingstoke that did that. So I went there and started training strongman, and then another place opened. So I went between the two, and then I decided that I could, if I got the kit, I could train at home and then just go to the gym for like friends, yeah. meet your friends and train there, because they've got kit that you can't get at home. There's only so much kit you can have at home.
Exactly. And I think this is a really cool thing to ask, actually. So in terms of investment, how much does someone need to, you know, front to get involved?
Just your, you have to classify. So now we're under something called GB Disabled Strongman, which is run by Martin Ty and Becky Ingram. You pay £25 basically to do your classification, and then you pay to enter events. That's it.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And then a gym membership. But if you're lucky enough, you could get a gym to sponsor you, which I do, so I don't have to pay.
Yep. And in terms of kind of the kit, and I don't know if you need gloves or any of the actual like gear that you wear, how did you go about sourcing that or finding that?
You can get the kit anywhere. So everybody needs wrist straps. You can buy them from anywhere. You can buy them on Amazon. But if you want a decent pair, then you'd be looking at what things like what the Stoltmans wear and stuff like that. Cerberus, all of that sort of stuff. You need belts, but you can get them anywhere. Like everybody chooses different belts. Some people are happy with the harder belts. I prefer a softer belt. You know, you don't need a lot. You need wrist straps. You need lifting straps. You can get them anywhere. It's not really very expensive. It's only expensive if you want to buy the kit, like if you want to buy a log, sort of thing, then it becomes expensive. I am very blessed. I have a purpose-built gym. My husband built me a gym. All my kit is in my gym pot for my Atlas stones. They're not. So I'm very lucky. And a lot of the strong men do have their own kit. And it is expensive to buy. But, you know, if you're lucky, you can find secondhand kit all over the place. Gary Clark makes Atlas stones. He took to making Atlas stones in lockdown for people and seemed to be very successful at it. And you need, you know, if you're in a seated category, you would need your seated deadlift seat. You can't really buy them. Gary charges a reasonable rate, you know, so we're quite lucky. We do have people that make stuff.
I love that. And I think that that just speaks to the community of the sport and the event. And I think it speaks to, you know, how people kind of take the sport on, and it becomes a lifestyle and it becomes part of your identity. I think you touched on something quite cool earlier. I was going to say, so with regards to sponsorships, you said you had your local gym sponsor you. Mm. How did that come about, you know, those types of conversations?
I went there and spoke to the manager. Just said, this is me. I'd like you to sponsor me. Let's see what you can do. And they came back and said, yeah, I'll get free entrance. I can do what I like, really. So I was quite happy.
Oh, so it was actually quite straightforward. It wasn't, yes, it wasn't like...
Most times it is quite hard. And that's the problem with disabled strongman. Everybody is self-funded. You only have a limited amount of money. A lot of the big companies that sponsor all of the big people don't necessarily want to sponsor disabled strongman. Trying to find sponsors is extremely difficult, you know, and some people are blessed. They just end up with sponsors. I had a few sponsors, but you need sponsors to help you, because some of the competitions are abroad, and you know, you can only afford to go to so many unless you're a millionaire, which nobody is. It's a very expensive sport in that respect, you know. So Magnus has tried to help us, because he's part disabled strongman now. And Tony Vanderberg, who provides kit and stuff over in Canada. So we go there and compete. And they do deals with hotels and things, so you get either free or a very reduced rate. Very expensive. And sponsors are very difficult, very difficult.
Why are they difficult?
I don't know. I don't know whether, I mean, it's a growing sport. It is the fastest growing sport in strongman. We have got, every year we get more and more and more athletes. So it is becoming bigger than it was, because it is a very niche sport. But when we run alongside, we did an able-bodied versus disabled.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool.
Interesting. Yes.
How did it go?
Disabled won.
Really?
We have guys that can outlift any able-bodied person in a seated deadlift.
Wow.
Mm.
That's...
So the big boys, able-bodied, lift about 500. We had a guy pull 646. 646. Bloody, yeah. Yes. At a competition.
So he blew him out the water, basically. Big time. That's a lot of weight.
That's a lot of weight. And then there was a German guy at the competition who did 645. These boys are strong. We've just had a lady. So there's an able-bodied woman who I know. She's an amazing athlete. She pulled, first woman to pull 300 kilos. That's ridiculous. But we had a girl, literally, I think it was about last month, do a Guinness World Record for a seated deadlift of 401 kilos.
Wow.
This is the sort of weights that these guys are doing. And it's a shame that they're not getting the same kind of sponsorship as an able-bodied athlete, because not only have you got to deal with your disability, you've then got to train around your disability. So it's twice as hard.
That is very true. And, you know, obviously, you know, a lot of the community and things like that. Who are some of the brands who you wish that, you know, would take notice?
Some of the big sponsors, like Cerberus, they would be amazing to have on board. You know, C4, who make really quite good like pre-workout and stuff like that. Any of those sorts of sponsors would be amazing to have on board, because GB Disabled Strongman, they spend a whole year looking for sponsors, because it costs them a lot of money to be able to run these sports and events. So they do their best. I'm on the team. I'm part of, I'm the athlete liaison. So I keep the athletes together at the competitions if I'm not competing. But I also spend my time looking for sponsors. Mm-hmm. And do you know how hard that is?
I can only imagine. You know, you probably, I imagine, does it start with sending off emails and then hoping to get someone on a call and taking it from there?
Yeah, is absolutely soul destroying sometimes when you send out, people don't even respond. I'd rather people responded and said no thank you than to ignore it. But you know, you just got to keep going.
And when they do respond, and it's a no, what are their objections?
They're already sponsoring people. Or they don't. You know, I know lockdown was very hard on everybody, and it was very hard on companies. So their sponsorship packages sort of dwindled down to nothing. So some companies are just still building that up. But they will take able-bodied over disabled. And it makes me very cross, because we try very hard, you know, and it's the only way that we can put on the events that the athletes love, you know, and the sport is growing. It's growing. I mean, I think the number of athletes that have come in the last 6 months is ridiculous.
Are we talking sort of hundreds, or, you know, is there...
There's got to be 20 new ones, which for a disabled sport is like amazing.
And as a liaison, then, how do you sort of, I suppose, vet them, or, you know, what happens in your role, as well as sort of keeping the team together, you know, all of those types of things? When someone joins the group, you know, what so, happens there?
Martin and Becky are the founders. So what happens is, if somebody contacts me or contacts one of the other athletes, they'll contact Bex and Tyne. So we've got this person. They will then send over their medical evidence. It goes off to a medical specialist, and they will say whether they can compete or not, because obviously there's some disabilities that are too dangerous for Bex and Tyne to allow them to compete. They'll then get put in a category. They'll get welcomed to the group. So there's a group chat. They'll get welcomed to the group, and everybody will welcome them. And that's really how somebody joins. You know, people look at my Instagram. I have a lady in Australia who follows me. She's been following me for quite a long time. And then she called me from Australia.
Wow.
And that was about 18 months ago. And she was doing Able-Bodied Strongman. And I was just like, what are you doing? So we're really good friends now. And she's just been accepted by Disabled Strongman 2 weeks ago. Now, I'm off to Australia next month, so I'm going to go and see her, and we're going to have a training session, keep her in track. So she's so excited. You know, she's got a purpose. She feels like she's got a purpose. The lady that lifted 400 kilos, she was struggling. She'd given up. She was an able-bodied strong man, strong woman. She got in touch with me, pushed her in the right direction, and every time I talk to her, I say, see, look where you are now. Should have listened to me, shouldn't you?
I think you touched on a really poignant word there. I mean, purpose. This event and this lifestyle to yourself and others who compete, this is it, isn't it? You know, it's the purpose. It's who you are.
It is. And it is something that, it's a sport where you've got a lot of friends. You know, you can talk to people about your disability. If you're having a real hard time with it, there's always someone there that's got maybe something a little bit similar. and you can have a talk. I gained a disability through having cancer, unfortunately. And there was a girl who competed who had a feeding tube, and they were giving me a feeding tube, and I was so upset, and I thought my life had ended. And she was amazing. The support that she gave me was just priceless.
And are you still, you know, in close contact today?
I love her. She's just amazing.
that warms my heart, because I think it just speaks to the, as I keep saying, the community and the human connection, and just how you, I love how you all just are there for one another and you keep pushing each other. And, you know, as you said, you know, someone is always on the other side of the phone if you need them, or has, can relate to what you're going through. Because I think it's kind of an advantage in a way, I would say, because I think that able-bodied athletes probably miss that in a way, because the competitiveness is so personal and ego-driven, I think, whereas yours, it's more supportive and it's more, you're pushing each other. And I actually think that's a benefit and an advantage that you get from, your community. So it's good.
I mean, you always get the big characters. There are some big characters, but they're not egotistical.
Yeah.
They're just big characters. There's a guy, he's actually stopped competing now, but Mike from America. Absolutely love him. Big, big character, amazing athlete, such a showman, but very humble if you speak to him. Not like, oh yeah, look at me, I'm great. No, not at all like that. He just is a lovely person. And they're all like that. Some of them are massive showmen, absolutely massive. They come out and they're like, you know, some of the women are not showboats, but these guys are. The men tend to do that. But then when you talk to them, they're really quite shy. And they don't realise how good, it's really weird. They don't realise how good they are.
It's because it's a performance, isn't it? And then afterwards they're like, oh no.
Yeah, it's weird.
These flamboyant, do they, so what do they do that's flamboyant then? Do they have like entrance music, or like how does it
everybody,
go?
At the Brits, everybody has their entrance music. But it's just, they come out, they're all like, rah, and everything like, look at me, rah. Honestly, and then you go and talk to them at the end and they're like,
oh, that's jokes, man. That is pretty funny. So what's your entrance music, or what was it?
Oh, it was Allo Black, A King Is Born.
Nice. I like that one. That is good. It's a good choice. Fair play. How did you go about choosing that song?
I heard it. It was weird because we needed entrance music for the Brits, and I thought, what am I going to have? And it played on the radio when I was in the car. I was like, oh, I like this. I like the words to it. And it came up on the screen what it was. So I thought, oh, I'll use that.
Love it. And when you come out to that music or hear that music, does it kind of activate competitor mode?
Oh, yeah. The music's playing. We're here. Let's go.
I love this. And in terms of, like, one or two more, I reckon. And I was going to say, in terms of, you know, the places that you've been to around the world, where have you competed? I know you spoke about Iceland, you've said Canada and America, but, you know, where's been your personal favourite?
I can tell you my least favourite, and all of athletes know Iceland.
Why?
I didn't like it.
Is it the cold?
Yes, pretty much, yes. I was very upset every day. It just was not my cup of tea. And they all laugh when they say, oh, we're going here. I was like, and I always say, not Iceland. Please don't send us back to Iceland. I hated it. It was so cold. Not my cup of tea at all.
Yeah.
But I'm not up for cold. No, this was savage. I've not felt cold. Like, it was awful. Hadn't prepared myself very much for that. And the fact that it's dark most of the time in the winter, I hadn't prepared myself for that. Oh, my God.
It's true. It's true.
These people are hardcore that live in Iceland. I couldn't do it. It's too much.
But in terms of the, you know, the hotter, let's just say, you know, when you're competing in America and things like that, and I presume it's a lot warmer.
It is, but I think the
is
best
that harder?
Place, yeah, in the heat. Yeah, God. We compete in Canada with Tony Vanderberg. So hot outside. But a lot of the events are outside, so they have it outside so people can come and watch and everything. Oh, it is hard in the heat. It is. It takes it to a whole new level.
I was going to say,
it was like 35 degrees outside and you're lifting weights in the heat.
Yeah, and presumably, you know, you're struggling to get the grip that you need to hold, you know,
everybody's
the bars
sweating or... and it's live streamed and you're looking like a mess because you're sweating all over the place. Oh, dear.
I love that. Well, you know, I wouldn't love to be, you know, there. But it's good. Yeah, it's good that you're tested in both directions, you know, and you're there whether it's freezing cold or whether it's hot. So presumably then the Brits are probably your favourite given our mild weather.
And usually the Brits is inside as well. And it's usually sort of July, August time. So it's still hot, but it's not outside like where you're like, oh.
No, that
inside it's weird. I don't know. I like doing things outside. I think it's really cool. And on a live stream, it looks the same as what able-bodied, because they compete outside when they're doing like the worlds and stuff. Yeah, UK's strongest man. Some of the events are outside. I mean, you can't pull a truck inside. That's not really going to work. But some of their events are inside, depending on what it is, and some of them are outside. So.
Where can you said that these are live streamed? Where can somebody find these?
Currently, if you put into the internet "disabled strongman," you can watch videos. But when there is something going on, each athlete will be given the live stream link, so they can put it up on their Facebook, and then people can log into it that way and have a look.
Okay,
that's
cool. So they're free events then. Nice, nice. And in terms of how, you know, is, you know, I suppose presumably they go all day, right? the actual...
it goes for 2 days usually. You're competing. The Brits is... Oh, no, the Brits is now over 2 days. Yeah, usually competing is over 2 days.
Love that. That's good. I mean...
That's how my daughter watches and she'll be messaging me.
Does that add more pressure when you see that text and you're like...
Yeah, you're can like, you not watch? Just don't watch. Like, look at it.
You're like, oh, can you... And I go walk the dog or something.
Because my daughter will play it on a massive TV. Look, it's my mum!
I mean, what's that like then when you come home? Or actually, this is a more better question. Has your family come out to watch you?
My husband's been to the Arnold's to see us compete, and he's been to the Brits. But usually we have to have one of us stay at home for my son because he's autistic, so only one of us can travel. And plus it's money, you know. Mm. Some people are paying for their whole family. But how are you doing this?
Yeah, yeah. And...
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Do you think it'd actually be more helpful for you, or do you enjoy kind of the solo mission when you're on it?
No. Solo mission for a disabled person is a nightmare. Absolute nightmare. So when we compete, if we decide we're going to do like... if we go to Canada. So not everybody will fly at the same time. But you try and get on a flight that at least one person's on so they can support you, because it's a nightmare. Flying with a disability is like hard work. I flew all the way to America by myself. It's hard work.
And just, I think we should just talk about this. So what are some of the considerations that you have to make as an athlete preparing to travel overseas for an event?
So you've got to think about what meds you've got to take. Then you have to have like doctor's letters and stuff about medication. For me, I have to take feed with me because I'm tube fed. That in itself is a challenge. Like, you've never seen anything like it. You've got your case, you've got all your letters from your doctors, the hospital, the dietitians in a folder. They will literally want to open things. Heathrow, and I'm sorry, Heathrow, I'm going to say it, you're not great. No. Yeah. Every time I go through there, you'd think I was a criminal. That's how they make you feel. You know, I can't go through the metal detector because I have something called a dorsal root stimulator in my side and it will mess it up. So I have my paperwork for that. They're not very good sometimes about that. And then they literally want to open your bottles. Like, you can't do that. They won't be sterile. Sometimes it's a nightmare. It is a nightmare.
It's unfortunate because you should think that, you know, people should be sensitive to these things and people should be aware. And, you know, I know that you got to play devil's advocate here and kind of see where they're coming from, but there should be better technology or something like that to actually assist in these scenarios so that it's
not such a... We're in the 21st century, not the dark ages, and it's very bizarre. And when I went to Canada, I'd rung the airline, I'd prepped them for everything I needed. I followed what they said to a T. My husband comes in with me to help me to the checkout, and I nearly didn't get on the plane.
Wow.
They were horrendous at Canada. They were saying, I didn't get this and I didn't get that. But I said, hang on, you told me to get this and this. Because I refused to put my feed in the hold. Because my other friend put hers in the hold. And where did that end up?
Lost.
In somewhere else, yes. Now, that's what keeps us alive. You need that.
Exactly.
So, taking it on the plane, but I did everything I was supposed to, and it caused absolute carnage. In the end, I was allowed on, but I got there 3 hours before, and I nearly made the plane late because they were just causing carnage for me. And the stress factor... It's bad enough that you've got to, travel by yourself and you've got to make sure you're okay and, you know, and then you've got that. It's not good. Not good at all.
And was it just as bad on the return trip home?
I don't even know whether I can say what happened to me on the way home. So I flew on the way back with American Airlines. And this was when I had a tube in my nose. I have a button now, but I had a tube in my nose. And I couldn't wear a mask because I couldn't breathe. I was having problems as it was breathing with this tube in my nose. And what happened to me at customs, at security, was really quite bad. And it caused a supervisor to have to come because everybody's wearing their mask and I have my little lanyard thing. It's quite obvious why I'm not wearing a mask. And this security man was screaming. I kid you not. Put your mask on. And this went on for about... And I was trying to explain to him, I can't breathe.
Yeah.
I can't... In the UK, I'm mask exempt. No.
Yeah. Wow.
The woman... I was with special assistants and there was a woman, she was pushing me in the wheelchair with all my bits and pieces. And she was so embarrassed. She was saying, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. Now, if I was a shy and retiring person, I would have started crying because he was horrendous. And it took a supervisor to come and sort that out. So it depends where you go in the world as to how you're treated, I think. That was the worst.
I'm sorry.
But then
happened.
Again, I've been to America and they've been absolutely amazing.
Mm.
Absolutely. But that's the worst it's ever been.
And I suppose, you know, it's the last thing you need when you've gone somewhere to compete or, you know, assist with an event or anything like that. It's the last thing you need because, you know, it's a sport and you're just out there to do what you're going to do. And I suppose from the minute you leave your house, like door to door, you're probably just tunnel visioned on that. And then you have to deal with all of these kind of deflections and irritations. So, yeah, I think it speaks again. You touched on it just then, and you said if you were shy, you might have cried and things like that. But I think your athlete mentality probably kicked in, and you were like, "This is just another challenge. You know, this is another weight I've got."
Try and look at it like that. I think, "What? Yeah. God, what's going to happen next time?" But you don't always. It doesn't always go down like that, you know.
No,
but
of
it
course.
Is difficult. I do remember when half the team were flying, and the other lady that had her. She had a trunk with all her feed in it, and that caused an issue. You know, it's not some of these disabilities, you know, it are not that rare. Being tube fed is not that rare, you know. Why does it cause such an issue? I don't understand it.
Yeah, I agree with you. And in terms of, I just want to talk more about nutrition now. Being tube fed and stuff, how does that affect you as an athlete?
I'm lucky. I get everything I need in a bottle. and I have a high protein feed. So if I need more calories, I just have more bottles. Whereas the other guys are eating like 5, 6, 8,000 calories a day.
Yeah.
And my food is free. I don't have to pay for mine.
I love that. And is that kind of sourced through, you know, the NHS and things like that? Or is that
a specialist? Yeah, I have a dietitian who orders, like, all my feed.
Nice.
And is it just this comes once a month.
And this dietitian is obviously aware of your, you know, the competitions and the things that you need to...
Oh, they all are. It's on my hospital notes what I do. Yes.
Love that. And for someone who, I think you just spoke about it just then, you know, to be someone that isn't tube fed in the sport, so you need to be having, you know, what does their diet look like that if you do know?
Cows and chickens and lots of rice. Yes, and eggs. So I think they eat a lot of eggs, a lot of rice, much meat. Yeah, lot of protein. Mm.
And this is an interesting one, actually. Do you know any plant-based, you know, athletes within your community?
I'm just, yes. Yes, yeah? We do have a guy who I'm sure he's vegetarian. And he was about 6 times world champion, so, you know.
Yeah, because what it was, I remember watching a documentary on Netflix, and it was actually the part of the catalyst that made me go plant-based, and it's called Game Changers, and essentially they were talking about how you can get the same level of protein in, you know, vegetables that you do through, you know, meat. And I was always just wondering, you know, is somebody who, you know, has a plant-based diet always able to reach the top? And you just said they are. So that's good. You know, that's, yeah, I always wonder.
And I think he's stopped competing or he's doing something else now, but he was an amazing athlete. Amazing. Big Mike B. Mm.
And I think one last question then I had for you is how do you, you know, what do you do for your self-care as an athlete? You know, how do you relax or how do you get back into the groove and chill out when you're not competing?
I binge Netflix.
I love it. No. <Yeah. laughs> Fair enough.
Because you have to relax. And my job is quite stressful. So not only am I training, I've got a job that's quite stressful. So like at the weekends, I try to relax. put my feet up, do as little as I possibly can.
Fair enough. And actually, that's one more off the back of what you just said then. So most people then are working either full-time or part-time, is that right?
A lot of them don't work.
Oh.
Some of them are in the army, so they've got extensive injuries and they don't work. Yeah. So that's another thing, you know, when you don't work or you've only got one partner that works, trying to get yourself to these competitions, self-funding yourself can be quite expensive.
I understand, yeah. Well, Alfie, I think this has been a really cool chat. I mean, way more rewarding and insightful than, I ever thought it could be. You know, I've learned a lot about...
I'll do my best.
I've learned a lot about the sport. I've learned a lot about, you know, what it takes, kind of the training, some of the names of people that are helping, you know, not necessarily, well, they are pioneers, but they're also kind of spearheading it into the next generation. And, oh, this is a good question. You know, you spoke about how it's the fastest growing sport. And just to wrap up, what does the future from your perspective for disabled strongman look like?
I'm hoping we get as big as able-bodied and then people can see us as equal athletes, not as people that are beneath, because we're not beneath. We are correct. Equals. And for sponsors to look at that and think, look at what these people do. This is amazing. Because I think people have to see what we do to understand. And then when they've seen, they're like, oh my God, wow. So I think it's bright. The future is bright for disabled strongman. And with Magnus von Magnussen, Bex and Ty and Tony driving it forward, I think it's going to be an amazing sport in the future. I mean, it's amazing now, but bigger and better.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Love that. And yeah, I'm gonna look forward to following it now. You've made me a fan just by virtue of your energy. And you know, I'm gonna go check out some more clips. And when is the next event that's being held?
So we've got Fit Expo in Manchester, I think it's the 14th and the 15th.
Lovely. And are you going to be cheering anyone on in particular, or, you know, what's your...
I'm not saying. I've got my favourites. I'm not going to tell you.
Fair enough. Well, yeah, we'll keep that bit hush-hush for now.
Yes.
But
I'm going to keep those athletes in check, and they're going to do... And the thing is, I keep them in check, and I always say to them when they're going out to compete, get yourself ready, focus, come on, let's go. And they do it, and then they come off and they're buzzing. Amazing. They're going to be good.
I love that. And yeah, I'm going to keep an eye out for it. And, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens in Manchester in May. So yeah, thank you so much for your time this morning.
You're more than welcome.
Yeah. As I said, you've just won a fan.
Thank you for listening to this episode of An Athlete's Blueprint. The authentic stories shared in this podcast aren't for everybody. They were just for you, a true sports enthusiast. Whether you're going into your next practice session or at the starting line for the finals, take the winner's insight from the athletes and the coaches you heard from today. Remember, this advice is only available on An Athlete's Blueprint podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.